This episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. For a first deposit match up to $100, use code COMBO. That's right, use code COMBO for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy. And without further ado, let's get into it.
Fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to the B-Ball Breakdown live show, coming at you as always on a Monday morning, my time at least. Whoever it is in your time might not be morning, but still, we are here. Lots to talk about, insanity all around, great games, and as always, I'm joined by Andrew Combo Salop to discuss the latest and the greatest. Combo, how are you, my man?
I'm doing well. NBA playoffs, full effect. It was a lot of fun yesterday.
A lot of fun. I hope you had a chance to really sit down. I have one lament, was that I was busy editing the Orlando video, which you all should go see because it's really interesting stuff. We got to talk about it because there's a Mobley section in there that I think was interesting and it sparked some debate on Twitter. But I was busy doing that, so I didn't get the full live effect of what happened in the Clippers-Mavericks game. I had to see it later. Did you see it live?
Yeah. I was watching it with my mother.
Okay, and you didn't turn it off when it got to be 31 points?
No. But the end of the game was very interesting. It was making my mother nervous, and I don't know why she's nervous. She has no vested interest in either team, but that's just my mom. Not to get too personal here, but I mean, it was crazy. It was an old fashioned game of NBA Jam, like 2-on-2 at its best. Right. And as good as Luka was, 29-10-10, he was outplayed by Kyrie, who's on his own team, Paul George and James Harden. I mean, yeah. James Harden is playing at a very high level, and he needs some credit because, you know, he's gotten a lot of criticism in the past when it comes to the NBA playoffs.
Oh, absolutely. So we got to talk about all of this stuff. So let's see how we can do this in a normal order. But first of all, what's up, Bernard? Good to see you from the Philippines. Puso. Let's see. So the thing that kind of bothers, I think, you know, a lot of people about Luka is how much he complains to the refs. And so he gets into foul trouble early in the game. He gets two fouls in the first, like, 3 minutes. And that affected – I mean, if you're looking for reasons how the Clippers were able to go up so big so quickly, that is part of it because then Luka can't play defense at all. And he's not, like, much of a defender anyway, but there were several, you know, scores that I saw that were, like, I was going through it so fast, I didn't even realize in the moment that he had foul trouble. So I'm like – this is a guy who must have foul trouble. There's no other reason for him not moving over or not even like putting a hand up or anything on some layups in front of him. So that was what contributed a little bit towards, you know, the Clippers able to score and get that big lead. They also generated a bunch of threes that were wide open. The Mavericks did.
Okay.
And bricked them all.
Yeah, so, I mean.
Yeah, you mix those things together. And what you're starting to sense, I think, is that the 31-point lead was legitimate. I mean, they got it. The scoreboard said so. But you could kind of feel that, like, the Mavericks would probably just start to hit some shots as they started doing. And then they came storming right back. It was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it comes down to, are the others making shots for the Mavericks, because the play of Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic leads to a lot of lobs and it leads to a lot of open threes. And, you know, they're mostly going to convert those lobs, but the open threes, they just got to make, because sometimes they're so wide open, especially in the corners.
Oh, yeah. And here's the thing that really frustrates me, to get back to the Luka point about complaining, is that so they're opening with man on him, and man is trying to be really, really physical. Okay, that's A. B, we know that the referees are allowing a lot more physicality. It's been that way since the All-Star break. You should be used to this by now. It shouldn't be worth complaining about. So man is, it picks him up in the backcourt. He's physical. He is in the left wing and he's being physical. And Luka doesn't like this, right? He's a star. How dare you put your hands on me, sir? And so he spends his way down yelling at the referee for them not calling an off-ball foul on him while he's standing around on the weak side, like trying to get open or whatever. And then he takes the first foul. He just fouls the guy. He just fouls Paul George or whoever it was on their right wing. That's the dumbest thing I've ever could see anybody do. I mean, listen, Luka's got the highest IQ we can find on the basketball court, but for him to be angry at the rep and then just sort of like, well, I'm going to foul you because you didn't call a foul for me, And then he gets the other foul because they knew how he had one foul early and they're going to go at him. And Paul George crossed him over and then, you know, got tripped up. Well, now he's in foul trouble and now he can't play the regular game. Everything gets screwed up. And that's all because he took this dumb foul with 10 minutes to, you know, 2 minutes into the game.
Yeah, I mean, Luka over the course of the season had improved on two of his biggest weaknesses. And I think those weaknesses are defense. He played a little bit better defense this season and less arguing with the refs. He was always arguing with the refs, but it was better this season. So it is tough to see him regress in that regard.
I don't know. You think it was better this season?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I guess it was that bad that, you know.
It's the domino effect. What came first, the chicken or the egg? I mean, he just has a better team around him. He has Kyrie with him who's
playing. I'm talking about the complaining of the refs better.
Yeah. I do think it's because they found their success partly, right? Because, like, the chemistry of him and Kyrie and then having those supported pieces around him, they were just playing better, so there was less frustrating situations. But I do think he was better because sometimes he just at least this year – when he was arguing with the refs, he would argue with them, but run back hard on defense. Before, he would just, like, stay and stop and talk to them.
Okay, fair enough, I guess. But, you know, in a playoff game, you got to still be better. There's another one where he goes for a gamble on a steal in the transition game. And then it's Terrence Mann has the ball, like, toward the basket, kind of could have shot the layup, gets up in the air, and then fires it back out to Paul George in the right wing, who Luka needed to pick him up. Never after he gambled, you know, the 4 seconds or 5 seconds before that, never just kind of started walking around, needed to get to Paul George, doesn't get there, and Paul George lights him up. So, you know, I have an interesting stat about that, by the way. In that 31-point lead, which was from across the first quarter and then midway to the second quarter, the lead was 55 to 30-something. What's 55 minus 31?
24.
So
that was quick, Coach Nick. You see the math?
55-24. So of the 55 points, James Harden and Paul George combined for 33 points scored, but they assisted on 20. So 53 of the 55 points were directly created by either Paul George or James Harden. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, those two were on a burner, especially Paul George in the first half. And then late in that game with that step back in the corner, which was just tough. If you watch the nuance of what he did with his feet there, I mean, that's just an impressive shot with so much on the line.
Oh, I believe me, it was. I mean, every shot was amazing. And by the way, you mentioned earlier, and we'll get into exactly why they were getting a lot of open threes for the Mavericks and just missing them all. On the other end, the Clippers were hitting some really tough shots. PG was like, I don't know what he was on, but it was something that he should maybe take again because it was insane. And then he finished the game that way. But I don't know if you can rely on that, you know, and sustainable that way. And, you know, same with Harden. They were hitting some step back threes that were really tough. So you mix those things together and you can get a 31-point lead. But we can also talk a little bit about the strategy here, because I think it's interesting what they're doing and how they opened the game. The one thing that the Mavericks are doing that's very curious to me. Oh, and by the way, if you have a question you want us to answer it, then the way to do that is on the YouTube side with a super chat, and that'll put your name up on the screen, and we'll give you lots of hype and thanks, and it'll really help us keep the show going. So if you want your question answered, then make sure to use the super chat function over on the YouTube side, and then we have to decide at some point, Combo, if we want to turn off the the Twitter feed for this. But nonetheless, it's great to have as many people as we can.
How do we bring them over?
I don't know. But anyhow, let's talk about that. So what they're doing is, they're obviously, when you have guys as good as PG and James Harden, and then the other side, Kyrie and Luka, you need to bring more than one defender. There's no way to defend these guys one-on-one. There's no way. You can't do it. Can Dort do it? Maybe Dort could do it.
I love Dort. I just feel like no matter how good of a defender you are in this league, there's certain players that you can't turn off.
I guess. I mean, you know, ask Brandon Ingram how he feels about Dort, because I don't think he wants to see him again.
I don't know. I think, you know, I love Brandon Ingram's game, but I do think Paul George and James Harden at their best are better than Brandon Ingram at his best.
They are done. They are. That is not a hot take. Yeah. Okay. So what they're trying to do is, so on the Mavericks defensive side, first off, they're letting Kyrie ignore Mann and sort of shadow at the free throw line, which is interesting. And by the way,
Say that one more time.
So Kyrie will pretty much ignore Mann and kind of hover in the free throw line area, the nail area, to shadow either Paul George or James Harden when they're on the perimeter trying to attack. The idea is good, but I don't understand why you do it with Kyrie, who is not, he's like one of the shortest, probably the shortest guy on the floor. He just is prone to kind of like not moving his feet, just kind of reaching. He got caught like on one and one for PG on that play. So I don't know why they're using Kyrie. They could easily find another, you know, they have defenders who are longer and better that would be much better shadowers. It's very strange to me.
Where is man located when Kyrie's doing this?
You know, he kind of wanders to the corner, you know, that by way.
Maybe they feel that Kyrie is their quickest player and could get over to man if somebody does make that pass. Like he could do both.
Yeah, but like the whole point of dissuading PG, for instance, is that the defender coming over is someone that would be dissuading. And I don't think PG sees Kyrie and thinks, oh, I gotta completely pull away. Because what normally when you do it, and you'll see them do it with bigger guys, you know, Draymond will do that and all that kind of stuff. Like a lot of times those players don't even engage. And by the way, Luka will, on what we've seen with Luka, is they'll you know, show three players in front of him. And he was also taking the bait and just trying to jack up threes on that end. He's like, well, there's just nowhere for me to get in there. So I'm just going to shoot my step backs, whatever. And he was way off in the beginning. So that was also – all these things contributed. Like, had they just hit a few of those threes, then it wouldn't be a 31-point lead. And then all of a sudden, the whole thing changes. And I think it's rooted in, honestly, the foul he took because he didn't get the call on the other end. It's just, you know – so that frustrated me because, listen, there isn't – I love the way Luka plays. I love the way, you know, how he runs this team and how he's working together with Kyrie. But if he's going to cost his team – because of stupid stuff, then that's, you know, in the playoffs, that's like he better get a lot better really quickly on that stuff.
Yeah, is it weird that I want to see both teams win this for different reasons? Like, I want to see James do really good because of the criticism he got in the past through playoffs. I want to see PG-13 win a championship, even though nobody's going to beat the Nuggets. But I also, like, love the duo of Kyrie and Luka, and I want to see Luka win a championship eventually. And I think probably are the better matchup for Denver, even though I think Denver would beat either team.
Okay, well, we save that. Put a pin in the Denver thing, because I got a hot take for that in a minute. But first, we have our first Super Chat. So let's get to that, and it's from Case Kajani. Thank you so much.
I
really
can I clear? Can I? Yeah. I think I didn't say that right. I just want to clear it up. I think that the Mavs have a better chance to beat Denver, even though neither team will beat Denver. But go ahead. Say the Super Chat again.
And we could probably go back and forth on that, too, because, you know, we've talked about that. The Clippers have guys that they could throw at Jokic.
Even with no Kawhi.
Oh, they would probably need Kawhi. Now, what's the story? Kawhi, I think he's day-to-day, isn't he?
Oh, no. He's done for the series.
Oh. For the series, but that probably means the playoffs then?
Yeah, I mean, but I think they felt that they weren't playing great with him because he was just a shell of himself, right?
Right.
So they got to wait till he's better. But then, I mean, the conditioning goes down over time, right? I mean, it's going to be harder and harder to come back. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And I think if you go back to our shows before the season, I think I had said that. I think Kawhi, you know, maybe even last year's, like, he's just not good. He can't sustain the season anymore.
Unfortunately, I think it's the same for Joel Embiid. It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
And I hope not. I mean, I've dealt with my knee's injuries and I've came back not comparing myself to Joel Embiid, but I don't know, man. It's just looking shaky. I wouldn't be surprised, actually, and this is total bro science, if there's some sort of surgery in the offseason with Joel. But let's get back to
Terry. Right. Which is why, you know, the Team USA thing is silly. Like, he shouldn't be even considering that.
Right.
All right. So we have our Super Chat from Case. Thank you so much. It says, who has the better chance to get to the finals, Minnesota or OKC? For me, it's OKC because of their youth, but Ant is that dude. So why would it be OKC if it's their youth? Wouldn't you normally say because of their youth, they have a worse chance to get to the finals?
Well, I guess youth has its pros and its cons. But, I mean, Minnesota's young, too.
Yeah, you're right. Minnesota, I mean, they're young-ish. I mean, you got
Conley. I mean, Conley's one locker room guy. He's like Joe Ingles for Magic, but just better, obviously, than Joe Ingles. I mean, he's like their locker room guy, and he sets the table, but he's not one of their top three guys, top four guys even. You know, he's a complimentary piece.
Yeah, he certainly was playing crappy. He made some mistakes on the show. Like, what are you doing for a guy supposed to be?
Yeah, but it's important to have a guy like that on the team, I think, you know.
Well, if he's doing what he needs to be doing. So Mike Conley, I was frustrated with a lot. There's two plays on the stretch. One of them where he blew a shot and then fouled at the very end, which gave them, like, their only chance they'd have of staying in that game. Toward the end, I was like, what are you doing, man? And I think he knew it, but it was like, you got to be better than that. So they got to hope he gets smarter or plays the way he normally would play, I suppose. But anyway, so who has a better chance to get the finals? Minnesota.
Okay. So Oh, man, it's tough because they're both really good, but I think Minnesota's defense is better. I think they're, as you just stated, some of their stars are a little bit closer to their prime. I actually believe in the ceiling of Anthony Edwards over the ceiling of SGA.
Yeah.
I love both teams, but I would say Minnesota would have the better chance to get to the finals.
I think so, too. I think on paper, when you're thinking about it, certainly just on that end. But it's also probably because of the veterans that they do have. But, you know, I think that they're probably deeper, right? Is Minnesota deeper?
That's fair.
You know, to some, in my mind.
I mean, okay. The other thing, though, is if OKC's probably the better shooting team, you know, that's another thing. But I would still take Minnesota.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But man, yeah, Minnesota's defense really, and I was thinking about that is if I'm thinking about a team that can beat Denver, you have to go Minnesota, defensively.
Is Jalen, like in that series, right? It would obviously be Anthony Edwards, SGA. Is Jalen Williams, would he be the third best player in that series? He's really good.
Yeah, probably.
You think he's better than Kat right now?
Ooh, no, you know what? Kat's playing really, really well, and I'm happy to see that. That's a tough one. I think Kat probably still gets it. I think I would probably have to go with Kat, but it's close. Yeah. But because, you know, Jalen Williams doesn't get enough credit. But what was I thinking about? Oh, well, the Aaron Gordon matchup is going to be a problem for any of these teams, right? Like, if Minnesota is out there, you know, by the way, I would love to see Naz Reid and Aaron Gordon, you know, like they could go that way and match up. That would be interesting because you need a guy that size that can handle Aaron Gordon and can move. So that might end up being a real key matchup for them. I'm trying to think of who else Minnesota has.
But Naz Reid, Aaron Gordon's going to have his hands full with Anthony Edwards. He's not going to be guarding Naz Reid.
Oh, I'm talking about guarding Aaron Gordon. On the other side.
Oh, got you. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Where's the Minnesota?
I mean, Aaron Gordon's the guy for Anthony Edwards, right?
That's interesting. They probably wouldn't have Jamal on them because they don't want to, like, tire him out. KCP probably guards him.
That's not good, man.
You don't think KCP could guard Anthony Edwards?
I mean, I don't think anybody could guard Anthony Edwards.
Oh, okay. But I think that's who they're going to go to. But
who you think's a better cover for Anthony Edwards, Aaron Gordon or KCP? Drop it in the comment section.
All right, yeah. I mean, listen, I get why you'd want to go like a little bit bigger and whatever, and he's fast. But it's intriguing at the very least. Like, there's a lot of intriguing stuff that you have to kind of figure out, and you can get really out of the box with it. Not that Finch would. By the way, Finch, I hope you're okay, man. Patellar, and I think I called it, by the way. I was looking at the injury and how he's grabbing his knee. I couldn't quite. So I was like, this had to be a trauma to the patella because it wasn't like his knee twisted or buckled or anything weird. So it was all
force. Dr. Coach Nick.
Yeah, that's me. Anyway, so great question. So I think we're going to go with Minnesota. And Ant is that dude. It caused a kerfuffle on Twitter when that dunk that Ant had off both feet. When he goes like right left, the left foot leading, and then dunks it, it's like, you know, I'm like, if you don't think that reminds you of somebody else, then I don't know what to tell you. And that, you know, there's a lot of people had some interesting takes on that one, but I think we all know who we're talking about. Let's get to some more super chat, shall we? All right. The Drew Show, best friend of the breakdown. Thank you so much, Drew. Is this playoff series a wake up call? But there's a cue in the wake up. Is he trying to send us a message or something? I don't know. Is this playoff series a wake-up call for Zion? Does he spend the summer getting in shape instead of playing himself into shape next year? Timeout. He was in shape. He looked as good as we've ever seen him in that playoff series, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah.
He looked really like, you know, close to like where you'd want him to be optimally. I think he might have figured that out. So, but then let's take that one step further. He could probably keep going, right? And really, you know, go. So if he's figured out like that, whatever, then absolutely he's an MVP candidate in my mind.
Yeah, Zion's great. I mean, I don't know why the guy needs a wake-up call though, right? I mean, he should be taking care of himself and bringing himself into the season in great shape. But, you know, I understand where Drew is coming from on this one. Thanks for the super chat. We appreciate you.
Yeah, and I see Ed wants to say McDaniels would guard Gordon. I was thinking of that. That won't work out well. Gordon will just manhandle McDaniels, right? I don't think he can handle that strength and that width. That's the problem, right? You got to have somebody who's like a LeBron size, but who's fast and quick and jumps and all that stuff too. So that's like an interesting conundrum, which is why like, I don't know. Would they start Naz Reid? Like, maybe they go Rudy Gobert, Naz Reid in the starting lineup to go up against.
I mean, he is one of their five best players, and he probably starts on any other team in the NBA. So why not?
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Naz Reid for sure. And then if you haven't seen that video, please go back and watch it. And it basically explains why he's the sixth man of the year. We have another super chat from Dom. Thank you so much, Dom. So really, really appreciate it. So generous of you. We need a video breakdown on Harden, best player in the series, and he's playing physical defense all without their best player. I'm doing the video right now, and I'm kind of just, you know, going to pull apart what happened with the lead and how they got him back. But I suppose I could do a little segment in there just to kind of talk more about Harden specifically.
All I got to say, that's a great video idea and great points by Dom.
But PG's playing just as well.
No. Over the course of the whole series. PG had one tough game. James Harden's been consistent.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
And also, you know, we laugh about the system. I am the system. PG is obviously playing defense, but he's taking on more of a scoring role with James Harden, his game managing and scoring, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, but PG is still playing defense, man.
Like, oh, no. I didn't say, I said PG's playing defense and shot making. What I'm saying is James Harden is not only defending, maybe not at the level of PG-13, but he's game managing and scoring as well.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
He has to manage the game. Yeah.
He's okay. He's a little bit more engaged. You're not going to see as many or any of those possessions where he's standing there and the guy behind his man just starts to waltz behind him and then goes to the basket. And then before he turns his head, he's open. You don't see that, at least. I mean, there are times when he's kind of like in position, you're like, this is promising, and then just kind of slow to react, and then boom, the ball is out there and it's a shot. But yes, he's certainly the best part about Harden now, though, and I think it's what we've been waiting for, is he's playing inside of the offense. And he is a cog in the wheel of the machine of this offense, where the offense is making him better. And I think that for so long he didn't do that. He would create his own offense 90% of the time. Now he only has to create his offense 10% of the time, and he's letting, you know, all the pin downs and all the handoffs and all that movement action get him downhill and get him some more openings. And that's a pleasure. I think that's what we're also responding to.
Yeah, most definitely. Great super chat, Dom.
Yeah, you know, and I remember when he did that in Philly too. He started doing that in Philly after he got there from Houston. And I was like, oh, okay, I remember this Harden, but it wasn't a lot, but he did a little bit. And then, you know, here we got to LA. And now he's just, they've got him, you know, shout out to Ty Lue and shout out to Harden for making this all work. And then, yeah, we might forget that, you know, we don't have Kawhi out there to play with him. And they're still really, really, really good. And again, and they're not even using, like, I don't think Tice even played. Did he play in the last game? You know, they have some decent guys off the bench, like, you know, that could give him some good minutes. Thinking of this, yeah, Tice didn't play. PJ Tucker didn't play, but I think he's washed at this point, right? And they're managing to keep, you know, Russ's minutes exactly the way they need him to have. The 20 minutes a game is about perfect. You know, you can get the best version of him without him hurting you. But I remember when my mind's eye, when I was watching it live. You know, they're playing so far off of Russ that it is making it hard on PG and Harden. And so when they were coming back and Russ was in, it was, you know, part of that was the reason. And so that's an issue that, you know, they still haven't been able to figure out.
I think they need to find a special protocol for Kawhi Leonard in these playoffs. I don't know if it's he should start playing basketball before he actually returns, or they have light practices, but they have to wait till he's all the way back. But then you got to deal with the chemistry thing on top of that. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Kawhi Leonard. But it's really unfortunate, man, that he's such a great player that just can't get on the court.
It is. And, you know, and they've invested a lot of time in that. And I'm sure he's invested a lot of energy to keep himself healthy. And but I just, you know, I think there's too much data at this point over too many years to say anything other than, you know, it's very likely he just can't stay healthy. And that's, you know, it is what happens. People wear out, and he had a run, but I don't think we're going to really able, you know, see Kawhi back consistently anymore, unfortunately, but we'll see. I hope he comes back. But either way, the Clippers can beat them without Kawhi, right?
The Clippers can beat them without Kawhi. Yes, I think they can.
Yeah, I mean, we knew this. I mean, they're a tough team. They got really great players.
I think so. So wait, so on the prediction show, me and you, I think I wanted to go Mavs, and you convinced me Clippers, right? Or was it the other way around?
I don't even remember now. I don't know if I was committed to that one. That's a tough one. But I think we're going to get seven, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a fun series. A lot of fun, great basketball with great players, all-time greats who are going to be Hall of Famers. So it's fun.
Yeah, no, and thank God we got Luka back in the playoffs so we can see him do his thing, because that's always exciting. Just stop complaining and stop, not finishing plays because of it. That just frustrates the hell out of
me. Do you think like his passion is a gift and a curse for the way he like kind of gets in his killer mode at the end of games? It's very emotional. He screams at the crowd. Yeah. He's always smiling, which is an emotion as well. Do you think that could work in the other way as well? Like, do you think it's like a gift and a curse, like how much passion he plays with?
Yeah, well, we talked about that last time where it's like he's kind of effing around a little bit. It's like, but because of that, he can make these wondrous plays because of the pressure is not on him. But then everyone has pressure. Everyone deals with it at some point. And you can see, like, the pressure was getting to him, too. And then he does have, the emotional pull both directions is probably – we need to kind of tamp it down a little bit and keep it a little bit more in between the two different lines, a little closer to the middle. I think that'll help him. And that'll probably happen with age as you get older anyway. So, I have a feeling we have more, even better Luka in the future.
He's going to continue to get better. I think the shooting gets even better over time, which it probably has been. I haven't looked at the numbers, but
yeah. Hopefully. I mean, the two motion shots, tough. And remember, when he has to rush because he's taking this crazy step back, whatever, it actually is a better rhythm for him. And those tend to go in more often.
That happens. Sometimes like when I'll go back to my own experiences. Sometimes when there's a hand in your face, it forces me personally to get more arc, and it makes it, gives me a better chance to make it sometimes, you know what I wanted to ask you about? Like sometimes you did the Magic Cavs video. Sometimes Paulo, the jump shot looks decent, and sometimes it just doesn't look good at all. And I feel like off the dribble sometimes looks better than the catch and shoot.
Yeah, I have to go look through. I need to do a really deep dive on Paulo's jump shooting for sure. There is some sense to like that maybe the dribble shot is better. You know, if you're working on your game, even when you're younger, like more often than not, you probably dribble the ball once and you shoot it. I don't know if you always have a guy who's just like throwing you passes all the time or whatever. So there might be some notion of comfortability on that end where you're shooting off the dribble. And as players are allowed to shoot more off the dribble, we're going to discover that, yes, that is a thing where maybe you just shoot better off the dribble, where in the past, because you didn't do it very much, we never really knew whether or not it was assumed it was a worse shot. When it turns out, it might be better for some people. And, with my methods and how I teach with the float dribble and the dip, that's a secret, unlocking thing that really helps everybody. Certainly to get your basis and the understanding of the shot. Actually, I'll talk about this for a second. So there's a path the ball takes, right? There's an optimal path the ball will take from the time you bounce it, so it comes back in your hand and it goes up and out, right? Mm-hmm. So what we develop is, and the dip is obviously a huge part of that, because like on a catch and shoot and the ball goes down, then up again, that's the power generation and the synchronization. But it also, by the way, has to do combo with the down also allows you to then more properly sync the leg straightening and the arm lift up. Because if the arm lift up happens too early, then you get the two motion and you have a problem with energy transfer. So the dip makes sure that you take your time on your arm swing up. So it's almost like, yes, it's power because it's a one direction first and then the other, but it's also because it just makes you have your hands coming up at the right time. But let me just get this clear. So we have this path, down, up, and then out. Well, as you get better and better at this, we can start picking up that path later and later. So you don't need to dip the all the time. You can then, start the ball on that path much later in the process, and then up and out, and you can still figure out how to generate and solve that problem to get the ball to go in. Does that make sense?
So do you feel like late hands and early hands are both an issue?
I would say that late hands are the issue. I don't do early hands. I mean, I suppose you shoot it so fast that I can't picture that.
No, what I'm saying is like, well, first of all, if your hands don't get to the spot quick enough, then you don't get the energy from your legs.
Right. Because they're late. So late hands become a thing where then they have to wait for your legs. And that's when it sits there for a second, right? And then you push and you lose all.
Oh, no, I meant the other way. Like if your legs are going up and the ball's not in place to be
I don't see that. I can't imagine somebody shooting and having their legs ahead of their arms like that. It's always the other way around, isn't it?
No, I think that's an issue sometimes.
All right.
Well, first of all, anything could be an issue.
Go film that and send it over. I'll check it out. We have another super chat. We have a couple more. So the Drew Show is back. Thank you so much, Drew. Again, you're always multiple super chatter. Always awesome to have you.
Thank you.
Speaking of playoff evaluations, Coach, what do you think of your favorite guy, Westbrook, thus far? Also, can we call it a wrap on Kawhi already? So, yeah, I guess this is already playing into what we just sort of talked about. But, you know, Russ, is playing fine. You know, you give him the 20 minutes, you can kind of – make sure you eliminate some of the bad stuff he's going to do. But I turned it on in the third quarter in the middle of doing my editing, and all I saw was his man sagging way off, getting the way of PG, who had to pull up a long two and brick it, and then he turned the ball over right away. So it's like – and then they went and scored twice, whatever. So the lead got closer and closer. It's like, okay, I know it's a very small sample size, and I need to go through the whole game to kind of look at it, but we'll see how much my eye catches a Russ or not. But, Russ is Russ. He is a guy who I think you hit the limit in his minutes, or else he is going to hurt you. He will hurt your team. He will turn the ball over. He'll make bad decisions. He'll throw inaccurate passes, and he can't shoot. He made the 1-3 that he got wide open in the corner because they're not going to guard him. And they have to continually figure out solutions, right? Like him handing off or him setting ball screens, because otherwise his man is just camping out and playing zone.
Yeah, I don't know if we could call it a wrap, but I mean, it's not looking good, Drew, for when it comes to Kawhi, because they said he's not playing the rest of this series, and then how good is he going to come back? I think we talked about that a little bit already. I also want to give kudos to Kyrie. Like, did you see some of the shots he was making at the end of that game? It's like the definition of...
Yeah. Wait, why are you eliminating the end of the game?
That is true. But the one where, like, he brought it back and put it in, it's like... It's kind of like the definition of great offense always beats great defense, because they did everything they could on that drive. And then he just like
had three guys on him ready to block it in within an inch. And he's going to his left. He's drifting to his left. And then so are they, right? So they don't fall.
Yes.
But then somehow he was able to still bring the ball back to the right a little bit and then shoot it on the way down. You had to see it in ultra slow-mo, because in real time, it's just so fast. You didn't even know what happened. It was like the gun.
I don't know if I saw a finish. Like, I'm not saying it's the best finish ever, but I don't know if I ever saw a finish quite like that. That was crazy. That was a crazy finish.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably up there like the Michael Jordan finals.
I mean, the Michael Jordan one was like, it's a little bit more memorable, right?
Timing wise, and it was the finals. And by the way, it was also the culmination of, I think, like 18 straight points by him, something like that. And he didn't have to do that, right? He didn't have to bring it down and then switch.
He said he saw Sam Perkins, right?
But Sam Perkins didn't actually do anything. But so I get it. He was like
just for good measure, right?
Yeah, I was there, man. I swear the Chicago Stadium, I think, levitated a little bit when that
happened. Oh, you were there for that one?
I was there, right in front of me. Amazing.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
But I think, I mean, you know, build a statue for Kawhi and let him, otherwise it's like heartbreak over and over again. And everything that I've seen, and, you know, I certainly, we have a lot of experience looking at players in that sort of trajectory who just keep trying and keep trying. And it's like the body is trying to tell you something. And I don't know if it's worth it at this point to continue to try and do that. So, let's get back to Case. Come back here, Case. Thank you so much. Again, multiple super chats. Again, we really appreciate it. This really helps us keep this show going. And they ask, if you were the Magic, would you go after Devin Booker? He would be a great fit to fix their offense, and the Suns could use a lot of guys Orlando has. By the way, did you see the other reporting that Stephen A was saying today?
What was he saying? Oh,
are we allowed to mention Stephen A on our show?
Why not? Why don't you want to mention him?
Stephen A, is he... I don't know. I would give him all the respect. The hustle he has and to build his brand, is unparalleled. So give him all that credit. But do I want to light on fire what I was watching? I never watched the ESPN or the ABC pregame stuff. I've never really done that. But I turned it on the other day, and But point being is, Stephen A was reporting that Devin Booker's camp says he wants to play for the Knicks.
Yeah. I saw that. That's interesting. I mean, he could definitely help them.
If there was a player that probably doesn't fit with Tibbs, I would imagine it's Booker. Mm. Right? Or is Booker like a low-key, really tough guy, whatever, that we don't realize? I don't know.
I don't think he's soft at all.
Okay. You know.
Luka took his heart before in the past in a playoff series. So yeah, I don't know if he's soft, though.
you know, he doesn't like double teams.
Yeah, I get him though. Like if I'm going to the gym and you're going to double team me every time, come on, man, stop. Come on, come on, come on.
You gotta have mindset 24/7, man. I don't know.
What are we doing?
I think it's indicative of something else that might be what I'm thinking. It wouldn't be a good fit. But let's get back to the question because it's about the Magic. Yes, I think Devin Booker would be an awesome fit there. Do you replace? I mean, if you want to upgrade Suggs with Devin Booker, I would do that in a heartbeat.
I mean, yeah, but why would the Suns do that?
Well, they probably would do it for a draft pick, and they would do it for a couple players, you know. But you know, but then the question then is okay. And there's some interesting stuff. The Rats are jumping off the ship right now in Phoenix, where you're hearing some stories about Ishbia, the owner, being completely ineffectual or dumb or whatever they're saying he is. And then other stuff.
But this always happens, right? Like 2020 is hindsight because they lost, they got swept, so all this stuff's going to come out, right?
Yeah, one of my buddies has sent me another tweet that was like Devin Booker elaborated on the details he was mentioning about the Suns.
Can I talk about that?
Yeah, because I didn't see the beginning part. I just see the elaboration on the details. What did he say? What's going on with that?
He was basically – I didn't like how that was covered, really, by media. Because he said, yeah, like you can't just throw talent out. It's about the details. And people took that as he was throwing people under the bus. No, he wasn't. He was just saying what it is. Like, you need the proper roster construction to win basketball games, and they just didn't have it. And I'm not saying this now. I was saying this from the beginning.
But is he also saying they're not prepared?
Well, I look at it from a roster construction point of view. Like,
because maybe he can't be out there unprepared in the more recent quote.
Well, yeah, they're not.
Everyone's got to be better. Coach has to be better. But if we're the leaders of the team, we can't go out there unprepared. Now, that's an interesting statement because what was.
I don't think he's throwing people under the bus. I think he's telling it what it is. I think he's telling the truth.
Yeah. You know, and there's already those little whisperings about Vogel and his job. But like, you know, if there is a coach that's good with preparation, it's Vogel. So
they just don't matter how good the preparation is if the roster don't work.
Okay, so let's get to that. So the roster doesn't work. Yeah, I mean, you know, it couldn't have worked. Like, you know, I was willing to give it a shot and see, you know, could Beal or whatever, somebody do a combo guard and, you know.
10 years ago, like pre-Warriors dynasty, maybe it could have worked. But the way that how much chemistry, continuity, and read and react type basketball is a huge part of the NBA zeitgeist now, like that won't work now, man. And I knew it. I was saying this for a long time. I could pull up the receipts.
I mean, yeah, and I can also argue that, like, defensively, you know what, before I could talk out of my butt, let me check what their defensive rating was. But, you know, it's probably the defensive stuff that really kind of would catch my eye most. They couldn't stop them when they needed to, but let me see. The Suns were 10th in offensive rating this year in the regular season, and they were 13th on defense. So, you know, and they had injuries. They missed guys. It's like, I don't know if they, you know, would you want to try and maybe one more chance if you get the guys to play 70 games together and all that stuff? Could you give them one more run back? What do you think?
If you get somebody that could game manage them, if you could get a rim running big, I mean, yeah, sure. But not with this current roster.
I would say upgrade Nurkic for how good Nurkic can be. I don't think this is a fit.
Imagine PJ Washington instead of Nurkic.
I mean, imagine Ayton.
The problem is though, if you take away Nurkic, that was their only guy connecting the team in terms of being a passer, like a connective piece.
Interesting.
So if you bring a rim running big and take out Nurkic, that's less playmaking.
All right. Well, then the answer has to be that KD needs to be that guy that needs to be the facilitator. We saw him when Russ went down and he did it. And he was great at it. And I think if he could go back to that, it's just a game and show him, that'd be amazing.
Nets too, when he stepped on the line, that whole series he was being point Durant.
Yeah,
he was doing a good job.
Yeah, so there's another. So maybe it's KD needs to adjust. You know. All right. Well, thank you so much, Case. I appreciate that. And we have some more here. Let's get down to scrolling. Wow, Ken C. Thank you. Wow, this is a really generous of you. Can't appreciate it more, or can we? We can. We appreciate you. So thank you so much, Ken. As a fan, start watching ball during the era of Warriors and Cavs. Never watched that much Tim Duncan Spurs. Now we have Jokic Nuggets dominating the league. Is there any similarity between them, or am I just being crazy? Laugh out loud emoji. Is there a similarity between the Jokic Nuggets and the Tim Duncan Spurs?
Well, I think it is early to compare them, right? Since the Nuggets only have one championship. even though it does feel like they're going to win it this year. But yeah, I mean, I like how there's a lot of international homegrown talent. I guess that's where you could, you know, find the similarity.
Okay. Well, no. Well, listen, the international thing's a good call for sure. There's that feel. But there is no question that the offensive, you know, I just tweeted it out. I was so gripped by watching them in game three beat the Lakers that I was like, this is just, they're just a great team. And you would say the same thing about the Spurs because the ball moves and the player movement, it's a lot different. And you could do a cool video about that because they use the Spurs would use the low post a lot more, whereas the Nuggets use the high post. But there are some similarities in some of the actions they do. And so to see the dance and ballet that they all use as three-man games with a cutter, passer, and a shooter, I do feel that there's a similarity there and also probably a shared mindset where they're both just extremely professional teams that understood how to approach this game and how to approach them each other as teammates. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree. And, yeah. You know, I guess another way to make a similarity or find a parallel is that Jokic and Duncan are very low maintenance stars.
Yeah. You know what? That's probably the most the biggest similarity I think between them. They really are. I would almost think almost exactly that same way. Who else is international? We got Jamal Murray, Canadian, Jokic. Is that it? I think that might be it. So they don't even have like international feel.
It is their two best players though.
Yeah. So that helps.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh, but I got a. Are we ready for the hot take? We have a couple more super chats. Let me get to that. But don't let me forget. I got a hot take about the Lakers. But let's get to Vance Armstrong. Thank you so much, Vance. You think it's a play on Lance Armstrong, or is his name really Vance Armstrong?
That's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. Because usually it would be like Vance and then like you change the other. Armstrong would be changed too a little bit, right? But maybe there's probably a Vance Armstrong out there. It's probably him. And thank you so much for being part of our conversation. When Halliburton visited the Pat McAfee show over the All-Star break, he took a ton of shots from an elevated stage. Could that have messed with his shot? That's interesting. I don't have any other. Can you hear that?
Yeah, it's a heart beating.
I don't have any other conspiracy sound effects, do I? What's this? Nothing. That's not either. All right. Anyway, I got to program that. I was trying to do it one time. Maybe somebody knows how to use a Tascam Mixcast. They can help me figure out how to set like these things where I can go, you know, or whatever. I got to have better ones. Anyway, I don't want to put you to sleep, this combo. I'm sorry. But what do you think about this notion of being on the Pat McAfee show, shooting shots on the stage? I'm unaware that there's a basketball court. I'm vaguely aware of who this person is and what his set looks like, but I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I would say, to put on my philosophical hat, that I didn't see this. I don't remember this, but what you believe will make it so. So if Halliburton believes that it messed up his shot, that's the only way I believe it could actually mess
all
up.
All right, firing this.
You just cut off philosophical combo, Coach Nick.
Yeah, I'm firing the show up because I kind of want to see. He's sitting. How long will it take me to scroll through here?
But I don't know. From a muscle memory and physicality point of view, I don't think one day could change things, right?
The answer is no. It didn't do anything to him. Oh, here.
Unless he believes it did.
Wait. Oh, it's him walking in. But when does he get on the damn court? Where is this? Here we go. What's this? I see him. So yeah, if you shot for several weeks on a really low, you know, the ceiling is low and whatever, and they had to adjust your arc. Okay. Like, yeah, but no, there couldn't have possibly been an effect there. Cause he'd get right back on the court and be, you know, find his rhythm again. So then the question was like, what was it? I think he was banged up. And I think if you got a wheel that hurts or whatever, that'll affect your jump shot without question for a while. And that could actually, once you start feeling better, still affect you. Right. I know I hurt my wrist at some point. I'm not sure I've ever really recovered on my shot. I fell off a ladder. Can you believe that?
That sucks.
Yeah, and it was really bad. And I had already, you know, but it was one of those things where I was on the ladder and I was stepping onto a bench, you know, a bench on my backyard to reach something, which is the dumbest thing you could ever do. Because, by the way, I don't even know what happened. I kind of blacked out. All I know is I was on the ground looking up. having no idea how I got there, you know? So at any rate, but what I did realize after that is I must've put my right hand down and to brace my fall, and I hurt my wrist. So, it healed, but it still doesn't feel, you know, as great or normal. And this is, you know, years ago. So, anyway, to answer the question, no, I don't think it had an effect on him there. We have seen guys like in the baseball who get the yips, right? And they can't throw the ball from second base to first.
I totally get you on the yips. How bad are Halliburton's numbers right now if we're going to start talking about yips?
I think he's recovered for the most part. I think he had a stretch there, but I got to check. If only there was a way to check real quick, but in the playoffs.
Like we've seen it with Nick Anderson, right?
Yeah.
Like he had the yips.
Yeah. So in this playoff series in four games, he's shooting 43%, almost 44% from the field, and under 30 from three. So there, it's not great. He has been struggling. I think one of my issues with his shot is he has way too much arc. And it's harder to control that ball when you shoot that much arc. I mean, I'm talking, he's getting 55 degrees, some of those. Mm. And plus, I've always been it's been remarkable to me that form can win him a three-point contest or get him in a three-point contest and be that good or whatever. Is there an ultimate regression to the mean? I don't know. But either way, he's got to figure that out, because they're going to need him to shoot better if they want to continue this.
What are the numbers for this playoff series? Miles Turner has been killing it, by the way.
His number is 29% from three on 8.5 attempts per game in the four games.
Ooh. Yeah, it's so tough. He does so much more than shoot, though. That's the interesting thing. But yeah, you want to see him shoot it better.
For sure. All right. So the Drew Show is back again for more. Thank you so much, Drew. Screaming A and his sources. Even if he heard from Booker's camp, why would the Knicks trade either Brunson or Randall for Softa Charmin Booker? Well, obviously they wouldn't trade Brunson.
Right.
They'd probably do like Deuce McBride and DiVincenzo. Right.
I think DiVincenzo, especially if they go deep, is somewhat of an untouchable.
I would hope so. This team as it is, and by the way, without Randall, like they're just about there. If OG stays healthy and all that stuff, they don't necessarily need him. So
they need Mikal Bridges or PG-13, and then they could contend with the Nuggets.
So what place, whose place is he taking right now on the Knicks roster for that?
Oh, you could play OG and Mikal together.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking, okay, so who are we removing?
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's unrealistic. They probably I don't know the numbers.
Let's say we don't have to max and match anything. Okay, so it's Josh Hart. Like, how do you plug in?
Josh Hart's a Knicks guy.
I know. So it's like, I don't know. Is it Precious? Like, but Precious is not, who do you have to give up some people to get him? And that's kind of depressing, because I like how everything else is fitting together right now. Bogdanović doesn't really have any value. So, that's why I don't even know if I would, if I was, even if you can make the trade work, it's like, I don't know. I mean, you're getting some stuff out of the guys you're getting, but obviously Bridges is better than Josh Hart, right?
Bridges is a better basketball player than Josh Hart, but Josh Hart, I mean, has some intangibles that a lot of players don't have, man. He fits really well.
Yeah, but you replace one Villanova player with another.
That is true, too. That is true, too. I think Josh Hart is the type of guy that's going to always find minutes on this team, right?
Right. How upset would you be if you were Josh Hart if you got traded for Bridges? Like, I'm sure he'd want to maintain his, be on the Knicks and be with all the other guys from college and stuff. Now, was there overlap? There's overlap there, right? Bridges and Hart? I don't remember.
I think Bridges is the type of player that could play with anybody, like OG.
No, I know. I'm just saying, the Villanova guys would want to all play together, and that would be really frustrating, I'm sure, for whoever does get traded. But I don't think they can keep them all together if they get Bridges.
How about one of the bigs in a package? The bigs are pretty good.
I think Jericho Sims is good. I think he could be a good player on a team.
Oh, I would trade Jericho Sims for Mikal Bridges in a heartbeat, though.
Yeah, but he doesn't have any. I don't think Jericho Sims has any value. But I think he could be good on a team.
I don't know. I'm not the biggest Jericho Sims guy. He is very athletic off 2 feet, though. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, he's big and stuff. Like, by the way, he'll be valuable if they have to play against the Nuggets.
Throw a Jokic, huh? Jokic,
yeah, I saw that when the Knicks beat them badly, it was Sims out there playing it most.
Jokic will destroy him, Coach Nick.
I don't know. Sims is big like that, and he's athletic and all that stuff. I mean, I'm sure they'll probably call like two fouls in the first 5 minutes on him,
They used to say that about Larry Bird back in the day. Some guy guarding him was too athletic, right?
Right. Well, we'll see. It worked well in that one game. So yeah, so Booker doesn't really work at all in New York. And you know what? Even if Booker wanted to go, and that's nice, good for you. But you know, I think that the, you know, whatever's coming out of Phoenix now, we're going to end up hearing a lot of stuff. Half of it probably won't be true. So we'll see. Yeah. But did we end up solving that? The whole notion of should the Suns just kind of, you know, run it back one more time?
Yeah, I mean, if this is the roster, I don't know. But they actually have no choice, right, in a lot of ways.
I mean, there's always a choice. There's always some way to do something and do some deal.
I mean, to make the team better. Is there? I don't know. It's like they don't have a lot of
Right. Like, I mean, they would probably trade Beal, but like, you know, and Beal has some value, but I don't know if he's.
Where does he go? Like the Hornets?
Right. And his contract is rough. So, all right, let's go on. We have another one. Alan Tran, best friend of the breakdown. Alan, great to see you. Thank you so much. Yeah. The Suns need an elite defender, rebounder, rim runner guy as a number three, not another scorer like Beal. It's almost like Alan was, he had already done this to comment, but it was almost like he was perfectly timed to do this right when we said that. I agree, because my next question was going to be, they're going to trade Beal. Then what do you need to replace him with? You need to replace him with the player they already had, Bridges, right?
Oh yeah,
Bridges. That's the guy they had him. They didn't.
The only thing is though, it's like as good as Bridges is, Brad. I mean, he is like another 2-3 guy, like Kevin Durant, Beal, and Booker. But he could play off the ball better than those guys, and he's more comfortable playing off the ball.
I think he blends in better there. Obviously, they couldn't have kept him because Bridges had to go for the KD. But it
feels like Bridges' best role is not as a go-to scorer, but as a complimentary, like, third or fourth best player with other great players if you want to win a championship.
Exactly. And Beal doesn't really fit that. I mean, by the way, Beal's been okay. There have been a couple moments where it's like, you know, he was doing well.
He shows some athletic pop lately, right? Get it to the rim.
Yeah. Yeah, but then he got in his head. He got upset. He was making some dumb fouls, and it just became, you know.
I feel for him, though. Imagine game four on a so-called super team. You didn't play that well, and then you get fouled out, and you can't even finish out to try to avoid the sweep. Like, picture that from his mind. Like,
I also think that some of the fouls were coming from that frustration before he even got to the point where he fouled out. And that was like, you got to get centered. I think maybe Booker can kind of get off center as well on that. You know, nothing really faces KD, but KD isn't going to be the guy who's going to lift you up as a teammate. He's not, you know, he doesn't put his arm around you and
KD's
be like,
got
it, don't worry about it. Like, he's not that guy either. So that's what they're
doing. KD's going to hoop. He's just going to hoop. If it's, he'll go out to play pickup tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then he'll just keep hooping. And then, you know, he wants to play with the players that he likes to play basketball with. And he's just kind of like a hooper.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. It's just like, I'm going to hoop.
Right. And it's just not like, it's not like that kind of leader guy, which you don't necessarily need to have, you know, he's that good. But on this team, I think that's what they're missing as well. So they got some things to look at, but you're right. Like, I don't know, you know, if they could make those trades, because those contracts are so big. But obviously, Beal would be the guy, I think, they would move. All right. Thank you so much, Alan. And let's see. Oh, we got Bron. Bron, thank you so much. Best friend of the breakdown, Bron. Always great to see you. We have the best audience here. And we have guys who come back every time and get the questions in. Thank you so much. Bron being probably the longest tenured
Shouts to Bron.
Friend of the breakdown. Candace Parker, top five WNBA player of all time, question mark. I think so. I mean, I got to see that list. Not that I'm like the most well-versed in WNBA, unfortunately, but she's got to be, if she's not top five, it's top like eight, right? I can't think there's that many players above her.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I don't know a lot about the WNBA either, to be totally honest, Coach Nick. I'm not well-versed like yourself, but you know, the WNBA only been around, what, 25 years? 20 years?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm sure she's top five at this point, because you can't count like Reggie Miller's sister, who wasn't even around.
Right.
Cheryl Miller, who wasn't even around before her. So, I mean, it seems like she's top 20. She's super versatile, and she plays the big, and she's super skilled. So,
yeah,
I'm sure she is top five.
Well, and by the way, she's really great in the studio as well.
She is good. She is good. She has great chemistry with those guys. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I feel like I haven't seen her in a while. I don't know why, but
she does the other show, right? Not on
TNT, right? Or no?
Exactly. I think. Yeah.
Anyway, I just texted somebody in the WNBA to find out what they think. They'll give us, if he gets back to me, I'll find out in a second. Actually, I could ask somebody else who played in WNBA. Maybe I should do that. Do we want to? It's a worthwhile answer. Let me see. Is she top five all time? WNBA. Okay. What else? Well, listen, the show is almost over.
It is.
I think it's my hot take on the Lakers, though. Are you ready?
That's what I was about to segue.
You know what? I need one of those bomb dropping. You know, I guess. All right. Here it is. People, I've seen this bubble up on Twitter, and I'm going to make a pledge to you, Combo.
Okay.
I need to stay out of my mentions a little bit more than I do on Twitter.
Oh yeah. You need a healthier relationship with your smartphone and your apps.
Yeah. And I wish I have a high volume Twitter account, right? It's safe to say.
Yeah.
And so if I walk away for 10 minutes, I'm going to have that 20, you know, that little thing at 20, it says, you know, at least 20 mentions, right? Like at any, you know, for over any time amount of time. And it's so like hard not to hit that button, right? Like I just kind of curious. And by the way, there are people who I've met who I've become good friends with through Twitter, probably you, maybe Twitter was the beginning, but nonetheless. So anyway, but I got to tell you, 90% of it now is just, it's horrible. And I'm just here to try and help people. You know, it's really weird, you know, but here's the thing. It's bubbled up in my timeline that some people are trying to think and people who actually know the game think that, you know what, like the Lakers could win this series. And if like Jamal Murray's hamstring is bad and he's got to miss a game or something like that. Is it hamstring? Is that? Yeah. Is that what he has?
I think so. Yep.
You know, Jamal Murray hits a game winner, right? After having a big lead, the Lakers have had kind of big leads in every one of these games, just like they did last year too. And so it's like all of a sudden I'm starting to wonder, wait, is there a point there where like, you know what, like at some point, like they got that win finally, having had another big lead. You know, you can't just chalk it up to they're better if the one team consistently gets these like decent sized leads into the third quarter or whatever. Like why not think that maybe like that's going to come around eventually and then they're going to start winning more of those games?
So you think the Lakers could come back?
I mean, no one's ever come back from 3-0.
You know, unfortunately, this is really unfortunate, Coach Nick, that everything comes back to the LeBron-Jordan discussion when we're talking about LeBron. It shouldn't be that way, but it is. It is, Coach Nick. And it's something that Jordan never did, right? If LeBron brings the team back, even though actually AD has been playing like their best player, which is a whole other topic. But if he could bring this team back and beat the Nuggets.
The LeBron-Michael Jordan discussion is sad.
Well, I'll tell you this. I agree with you that it's sad and there's too much of it. I would also say that it always gets great engagement on social media.
Yeah, I'm not interested. I'll probably have to mute.
So if I put on my producer cap, we could just put LeBron and Jordan on the thumbnail every day and it'll do great, but we don't want to do that. That'd be like selling out.
Yeah. And I've done that. You can go watch the videos. There's at least a couple. I did the Michael Jordan and Kobe, but like there's something weird and fragile about that conversation that just, I am uninterested in anymore.
All right. So let's move on. Let's get more into your hot take before we get out of here.
I will say that like, you know, the analysis of the 90s basketball by people who were born after that era is, you know, as someone on the lawn wearing plaid pants right now, it is ridiculous and ill-informed at best.
They take small clips and they make it seem like that's all of 90s basketball, right? Like
it's nonsense is what a lot of it is. Anyway, so, you know, if we get back to the Lakers thing, yes, can the Lakers win? No, like it should have been a sweep. The Nuggets probably, you know.
What's the hot take?
So the hot take was Lakers could beat them. And like, that's what I wanted to go into discuss. And it started to make me think that maybe they could.
You just said they couldn't though, right?
Well, I mean, I'm getting back to like, let's put the, you know, the final stamp on the,
look what you did there. Okay.
But like, you know, even in game four, like, you know, the Nuggets played terribly. Like they were missing shots they don't miss. Jamal Murray doesn't miss layups like that and runners, whatever. I kind of feel like I could see Jokic missing. You know, they were just out of sync. I think one thing that they proved that it's very hard to sweep anybody, right? It's hard to beat four games in a row in a week.
Really? Yeah, it's hard to win a championship. Really hard. And they did that last year. So, but it is hard to sweep teams. Yeah. I mean, like, you have a LeBron and AD playing really well. Like, you shouldn't expect a sweep. I thought it would, you know, be Denver in six. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I got a response from the Candace Parker question.
Okay.
So it kind of not the most specific answer, but Candace Parker, is she top five all time WNBA? And the answer was give or take. So probably like top seven.
Or that means 4-7, right? Or 3-7.
Yeah,
seven.
Or somewhere in there. So I bet you, if you want to say seven, then great. Oh, by the way, the top 15 argument we had the other day about Donovan Mitchell and then, you know, having Ant behind him. Did Ant, I think Ant's finally put that to bed, right? Ant should be rated higher than Donovan Mitchell.
Oh, yeah. And he's top 10 probably now.
Right? Now, but you're going to say after one game, you're going to say top 10?
What do you mean one game? He's been doing this. He's been doing well all year. I mean,
I know, but I didn't feel like you said top 10 after, you know.
I'm the guy who's been screaming about Anthony Edwards since college. I just posted a receipt. I mean, I've been saying he's a future MVP for a long time. Come on, Coach.
I want to say that I had the first future MVP take, didn't I? Can I get that credit or not?
Check. Yeah, you could get any credit you want, Coach Nick. But right, check my Instagram. I just posted some old receipts from the draft. Even though he and people are hitting in the comments like everybody knew he's good, and then other people will say he was the number one pick, but he was heavily scrutinized. Like a lot of people were saying he didn't have feel for the game. He was a heavily scrutinized number one pick.
Oh, there were some horrible hot takes on him and his workouts before. That was ridiculous. Yeah. And I remember.
Yeah, and then people were saying something he said in like an interview where they felt like he didn't like basketball. Like I was like, come on.
Yeah, that was so dumb. So dumb. And here we are. And he's the next coming of somebody. So, there's no question. And listen, I like Donovan Mitchell. He's good. He's got a lot of skill. He led the Utah teams to being the top of the Western Conference at a time when, you know, the Western Conference was the best conference in the world. But I think there's a different level here with Ant. And I think that, you know, the ceiling obviously is really high. MVP without question. And I didn't think, by the way, that it would work with Kat. And I certainly didn't think it would work with Kat and Gobert. And well, remember how everyone felt about that.
Kat, I think, knows his place at this point.
Yeah, I think he does. And I'm still worried about his emotional center, you know,
the fragility of his emotional state.
Yeah, things can get him upset pretty quick and dysregulated, and that makes me worried. That said, he was great. He really was. And I love how Ant's like hyping him up too. Did you see what Ant said in the thing in the post game where he's like,
smart guy.
Yeah, it's like, stop effing fouling, you know, and if you just stay on the floor, you're going to be the guy that they can't handle. And he's right. It was, you know, great to see them move on in a series that could have been a lot tougher for them. I got to check the bracket because, wait, who are they playing?
You know what? As funny as Ant is, he's a wise young man, right? It's funny.
He
and
really is.
He
would be the best teammate probably without question. So they're waiting for the Nuggets Lakers. So, yeah, it's the next round. They're the ones. They're the ones who could beat them, right? The Timberwolves are the one team I think that have a chance.
Okay. I like that. I mean, no, I like that.
No, what are we saying? I mean, I've been saying the Clippers could beat them too.
Yeah, but you know, I like what you're
saying. Why though?
I like what you're saying with Minnesota because their defense is so good, and then you know, their offense isn't the best in the league, but the ceiling of Anthony Edwards, when you have the guy who's just playing like the best player on the court, that combined with the defense, I mean, and Kat is an all-star level player. If he's making shots, Rudy's a great defensive player. I think there's a chance there, but Denver's going to win if they stay healthy.
I agree. And I don't think the Clippers can do it without Kawhi. They need a healthy Kawhi to handle that. Because, again, the Gordon conundrum and then Michael Porter Jr. conundrum. Like
the funny thing is, Coach Nick, is that sorry to cut you off, but they're 0-2 with Kawhi and 2-0 without him.
They're 0-2 with Kawhi. Yeah, right. Like as you said in the beginning, you're right on. It's 50% Kawhi, and that's going to, you know, it hurts them. They have guys that can give him a little bit more because they're healthy versus what he's giving them. So it's sad, but again, give him a statue in San Antonio. Hell, give him a statue in LA too if they want. But you know, I think it would probably be a nice thing for him to just sort of, you know, not have to deal with the heartbreak every year anymore. I don't know. We'll see. But then again, I guess it would be an amazing story if he figured it out, but I just don't think it's going to happen at this point. So, but I think it's time for us to build our statue to ourselves for such a great show.
We deserve a statue.
Yeah. Let's do we'll do a GoFundMe for a statue. But where would we put it though?
One in Riverdale and one in LA.
All right. We got to have, so now we need two statues?
Yeah, one from, of course, if there's two of us. Come on, Coach Nick.
I guess so. But we could be the same statue, like, together.
Oh, that'd be pretty cool, right?
Like in the middle of a high five. I don't know what we'd be doing. We have to figure that out.
Like a boom?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe me counting down like the old days?
Yeah, right. Okay. But I don't want to just be like, you know, frozen. I want to have some action I'm doing. I don't know, but we'll discuss. Okay. And we'll figure it out.
All right. Oh, I need this philosophical finger.
Oh, that would probably be yes. I think the finger is where you is your thing. And then I don't know what I'll do, but we'll come up with it. I'm sure we'll workshop it. Maybe some people in the comments will help us. But thank you so much, everybody, for being out here for this nice, perfect show. We did a really great job, I think. It was really interesting stuff we talked about.
You know what's crazy, Coach Nick? I feel like we're really, really good at this.
Listen. I mean, you know, we can't be patting ourselves on the back too much, but I hear you.
Okay.
You know, we got to be strive to get better.
You could realize how good you are and at the same time get better. That had the finger, but it wasn't that philosophical.
Yeah. Which reminds me, like, you know, I had a guy, I'm an OG, I guess, right?
Oh, you're the OG. For YouTube, you're the OG of OGs.
All right, but how do you, what's above OG? What's older than OG, an OG? Is there? Because there's a guy who slid into my mentions yesterday or 2 days ago, who was even older OG than me. And, it made me feel like there are just people who don't want to get better at their craft, and which is sad. It was really, I don't even have to get into it. You might be able to find it if you look, because I did respond, but you know, it's somebody who coaches and to hear
you don't have to say who it is, but what was the take? You don't have to say
like you're talking about eyes following the ball, you know, and I know it's provocative, but I love it because we don't always get that shot of the player shooting and then they stay on his face.
So what, he was DMing you?
No, this is these are replies that you'll see.
Wait, is this a notable coach?
Oh yeah.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah. I
mean, it's public on Twitter.
It is. So why? That's why I asked you to say who it was.
Well, I said you don't have to say who it is. So I mean, but
all right. I guess
let's just leave it alone. Let's end on a good note.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah,
it's pretty inspiring. It's like as a coach, if you're out there or anybody doing anything that you do, you should be striving to constantly reassess and make sure that your methods are as optimal as they can be. And that's what keeps us going. Otherwise, like, I don't know, why get up in the morning?
Yeah, so. I mean, like, look, the things we thought were good 50 years ago seem crazy now. And 50 years from today, what we're doing right now will seem crazy. So, yeah, you always have to get better.
I'm fascinated if that's really the case, right?
That's always the case. Because think about human beings 500 years ago, right? It's the same for basketball.
Because obviously what I look back on from the 50s and 60s, how they taught shooting is like using leeches if you're in medicine. You really feel like 50 years from now, it's going to be that much more evolved? I mean,
100%.
Interesting.
Right. I mean, people are going to be dunking from further out. They're going to be like athletic development's going to, we don't, especially like from an athletic development standpoint, there's so much we don't know that the human body is capable of.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I'm just talking about like the jump shot itself, but fair. That's fine. You know,
the jump shot. Yeah, we're gonna find things about the jump shot.
All right. Definitely. I'm excited about that because at some point, I don't want to get stuck doing the same exact thing I've been doing all these years. But that's what happened. That's what happens with people. And then toxic masculinity gets involved. It's like, yeah, I'll show you. It was a dark day in what I thought was going to be, oh, this is cool. Well, you know, I have never heard from this person before. So maybe it's never too late. Maybe that guy, despite his advanced age, will will evolve a little bit, and it'd be good for everybody. So, Combo, again, thank you so much for being here. Everybody else, thank you so much. All the guys in the Super Chats, really, really appreciate it. It's a terrific show for all of these things. And don't forget, sports fans and P-Ball Breakdown, we're not a channel. We're a conversation. You in? Are you in, Combo?
Yes, sir.